Welcome to the old school meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, featuring speakers with long-term abstinence. This meeting was born online, and it's going to stay that way. That means you can attend live on Tuesday evenings at 6:30 Pacific. And now, our speaker.
It's now time for me to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. Wow. There are so many people I know in this room. What a treat for me. Golly gosh. My name again is Nancy D. I'm a compulsive overeater and a 100-pounder. And for anybody that doesn't know what I mean by that, a 100-pounder means somebody has known the burden of carrying an extra 100 pounds or more. And that's something I know. So what it used to be like, well, I don't know exactly what I weighed when I came in, but I knew it started with a 3. I could guess 314, 340, I don't know. I know what size I wore. there was only one more size left in the large store, the Lane Bryant, the large women's clothing store. The next size was 28. I was wearing a 26. And there was such a small selection of garments available. It was about this, you know, it was just inches of selection. No matter how much money I had, that was all there was. And I remember thinking, what will I do? What will I do next? And so what it used to be like is I ate all the time. And I'm a hardcore sugar addict. I don't have a stop button related to sugar. I don't know that I have a stop button at all, but it really showed up related to sugar. And I remember one time I used to eat all the time in a celebratory fashion. And I remember I used to go to these, it was a coffee shop. I can't think of the name of it anymore. It was downtown LA. And it was one of those places where it was like an old fashioned coffee shop. The waitresses wore hats and little starched, you know, apron sort of things. And it was highfalutin. I mean, they served really high level, hardcore sugar items. And I used to go there as a celebratory kind of a thing with friends. And I remember one time I wanted to cut back. I knew that I needed to lose weight and I wanted to cut back. And so the idea of not going to some place like that for a treat, I couldn't even conceive of that. So what I did when I wanted to cut back, I stopped eating regular food. I only ate desserts. That was my idea of how to cut back. So I stopped eating meals and I just ate dessert. So, when I came in, I was lucky enough to have a friend that was recovering in AA, and I saw him change, and we talked all the time, and I knew that I was just like he was about drinking, I was about eating sugar. I was just like he was, and so I'd heard of Overeaters Anonymous because this was the 80s. I came in, I count my time from 1987. My abstinence birth date for me is April 13, 1987. And in those days, I don't know if those of you old enough to remember, TV used to go off at night. And so before it went off at night, there would be public service announcements. And so I'd heard of OA on a public service announcement. Not that I knew what it was, but I had heard of it. And so I'd heard of it, and then I'd like heard of it again a year later, and then again a year later. I'd heard of it a couple of times. I hadn't come in yet. But what happened was the food stopped working. And there was a particular binge that I remember, not that I could tell you when it was, sometime in 86. This particular night, I didn't feel well. I was anxious about something. And my daughter went to bed, and that was my favorite binge time after my kid had gone to bed. And so If you've heard me share, you hear this story because this is what happened. That night, I didn't feel good. And so, I mean, not physically, but I didn't feel good about whatever. And so I made a recipe for myself, something I did all the time. I made the recipe on the back of the Quaker oatmeal box. It was a circular box. If you know, you can picture that. There was a recipe on the back for oatmeal cookies, chocolate chip oatmeal cookies. And I made it from scratch, by heart. I didn't have to look at the recipe at all, literally. I'd made it so often, I knew it off the top of my head. And I made it, and I ate the entire batch of cookies. And I sat, when the cookies were baked and ready to eat, I sat spread eagle on the floor, put the warm pan of cookies in front of me, had a quart of milk by my hand, and I started eating cookies, and I was going for the... That's what I was seeking, was that aha. And I ate the whole batch and I didn't feel any better. And so I got up and I made from scratch that same night a cheesecake. I had the ingredients on hand and made from scratch a cheesecake. That night after eating the cookies, I ate the entire thing. I didn't feel any better. And so what did I do that same night? If you've heard me share, you know what I did? I made the recipe on the back of marshmallow cream jar is a recipe for fantasy fudge. I made and ate that night the entire recipe after eating the entire recipe of cookies, the entire cheesecake. I made the fudge. I was sick as a dog. And I used to overeat sugar in mass quantities so often then that I started to pick but it was going to give me a side effect. I was going to be sick in some fashion. Am I going to have this kind of runny sick? Am I going to have this kind of blow up, you know, eyes swollen sick? Am I going to be nauseous? You know what? I used to pick the sickness because it didn't occur to me literally not to eat the sugar. That wasn't even a choice. What side effect was I going to have that night? So that's how I lived. But my friend was recovering in AA. And after that night, after I ate those three things and I was so sick and I never felt better. The food didn't work. And I can't even tell you. Well, I don't have to tell you. You know what it feels like. I was at my wit's end. I was bereft. I remember that heartache. I remember that feeling, that loss. I've sunk to this low and it didn't work. So I was desperate. So I'd heard of OA. My friend was recovering in AA. So I came in. And you guys, that was a hard thing to do. I remember that coming to my first OA meeting. But I heard you guys talking, and I didn't know so much what you were talking about, but I did feel better after going to the meeting. I remember one of the early meetings I went to was in LA. I live in LA, Los Angeles. And one of the meetings was on Crest Heights. Meeting's not there anymore, but some of you will nod because you remember that meeting. And it was a big meeting, and I think it was a Thursday night. I don't remember what night it was. But I was a little bit late, hard to park around there. I was a little bit late. I got in, and I saw there was a table across the back, and I headed for the table. I didn't know what to do. And I headed for the table. I thought it was the refreshment table. It was the literature table. But what did I know from literature, right? So I was confused by the whole thing, but I started to go to OA meetings. And each time I felt better. And I heard you guys talking about the steps. There were lots of things with numbers. I didn't know that there were some steps, traditions. I didn't understand all that. But I did know that when you talked, you would articulate things that I'd never been able to put into words for myself about myself. Somebody would share exactly how I felt. I didn't actually leap up, but I wanted to leap up, stand up and say, that's it. Because you had explained something that I didn't understand about myself. And it happened again and again and again. And so I kept coming. And I heard you say, get a sponsor. And I had a big job. I was in charge of lots of stuff in corporate America. It was a big job. But I wasn't so accustomed to asking for help. I was accustomed to doing, you know, trying to do everything myself. And so when you said get a sponsor, that meant I had to speak to someone and ask them for help. And I was afraid of it. And I told someone after a meeting that I was afraid to do that. And so she said, simple suggestion. She said, why don't you write down on a piece of paper, will you be my sponsor? And I thought, oh, that's good. So these were in the paper days. You didn't send a text. You had to like write a note, a piece of paper, you know? And so I did. I wrote, will you be my sponsor? And I carried it around. And so, Mary Pat. And so when I saw someone, I started shopping, you know, for sponsors, somebody that I could relate to. And one day I saw somebody. And I don't know if anybody remembers, you know, maybe you'll remember. My first sponsor's name was Aletha Mathis. She moved to Texas. And I thank you for nodding because you remember Aletha. She was my first sponsor. But I saw her. I got so excited. I forgot to hand her the paper, but I did ask her, would she be my sponsor? And she said, yes. And so we started. And the very first thing she asked me to do was something I'd heard of it, but I didn't want any part of it. And was 30 and 30, which meant going to 30 meetings in 30 days. This wasn't Zoom. This meant get in the car 30 times in a row and drive to meetings. And that meant I had to tell my family because I was going to be someplace every night, every day. Madam Timer, help me. I see the time, but is this my, where am I in my time?
Hi, Nancy. There's a total of 18 minutes. When this rings, it will have been 10. I forgot to ask you before. I apologize. So you're on, you're almost done with 10, and then okay. You'll have 8 more.
Okay. Would you do me a favor and break those 8 into 5 and 3?
Yes.
Okay. Where was I? Okay. 30 and 30. She had me do 30 and 30. And I did. And I had to let my family know that I was going to do this. And I didn't want to tell my family because every other diet I'd done them. If it was commercial and available, I'd done some really expensive things, thinking that the more exotic the thing was, the more likely it was to work. That's what I thought. And so I'd done Optifast before the stars and everybody got involved. This was just Optifast. You don't eat anything at all. I didn't eat anything at all for 6 months, literally lost weight and then put it right back on because I didn't know how to do anything else. But so I had to tell my family, but I didn't want to because I didn't want to hear them say, I thought you weren't supposed to eat that. And which they would have done. But I had to tell them. And so I started coming and you guys were just lovely to me, just lovely. And I didn't, thank you. That means I have 5 left?
Five,
no, I have 8 left.
Okay. 5, yes.
Thank you. You were talking about things that didn't ring true for me personally. I didn't think they did. Like you were talking a lot about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in those days, this was the late 80s, the OA literature that we use, you know, so freely today, a lot of it hadn't been written. It didn't exist. So I was raised up on AA literature, on the big book and AA 12 and 12. And my sponsor said, whenever you hear somebody call out a page number referencing a big book, write it down and then go look and see what they're referring to. And I did that. And I heard people several times refer to the Jaywalker. And so I wrote the page. I think they said the page number when they were talking about it. They mentioned the Jaywalker, they said page 37. I went and looked it up. And before I looked this up, I didn't feel that the AA material was so right for me because this was my thinking. It was written by white men in the 1930s. And I thought, I don't think so. How are they going to help me? How are they going to get me? How am I going to get what they're talking about? Well, then I read the Jaywalker. Whoa, whoa, whoa. And that's how I knew I was in the right place. Because is there anybody that does not know the Jaywalker? Well, Letty doesn't know it because she's brand new. Letty, do you know about the Jaywalker? Probably not. Let me tell you very quickly. Page 37 of the big book. It talks about a guy who has a thing for jaywalking, literally dashing out in the street, crossing where you're not supposed to cross, no crosswalk there. And he gets hit and he's got a thing for it. And he gets hit several times in succession, injured so badly that he can't work. His wife's going to wants to divorce him. What's with the jaywalking all the time? You keep getting hurt, you keep getting hit, and he swears to God he's not going to do it anymore. And I'm reading this in the big book, and I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. That's what I thought. And the very next line on page 37, and we're on page 38 now, the very next line says, you might think this is ridiculous. I had just thought, this is ridiculous. And the line said, you might think this is ridiculous, but if you substituted eating sugar, it would fit me exactly. And it does. And that's how I knew I was in the right place. And so that's how I was able to keep coming back is because I had never seen myself represented in literature before reading the story of the Jaywalker. I thought I was bad. I thought I was weak. I thought I was stupid. I thought I was weak and lazy. I didn't know I had a disease. That never would have occurred to me. I thought I was weak. I am weak. I'm powerless. Turns out to be the strength. This program, you guys, this literature, this book, these meetings have changed my life. I remember, like, I didn't know how to do things. You guys said to pray. I understood the idea. I understood that would help me, but I didn't feel any connection with God. I believed in God like a theoretical concept, but I didn't have any connection. I certainly wasn't going to ask him to help me with my food because he had big things like wars and, you know, tidal waves and stuff to deal with. And it was my responsibility to take care of my food. That's how I thought. And so I didn't bother God. I didn't ask God. And I didn't want to pray wrong. God forbid I should pray wrong. So I wasn't praying at all. Then one day I'm sitting in a meeting. This young surfer dude guy didn't look like me at all. He starts talking about how he prays. And he said, I remember, I wasn't praying at all because I didn't want to do it wrong. I didn't know if I was supposed to pray like this or raise my hands, or people talked about praying prone. So I wasn't praying. He said he prayed in the car. And I thought, because if I prayed in the car, my hands were on the wheel. I didn't have to worry about what to do with my hands. And he said that his prayer had to be warm and friendly and easygoing with God. And he started his prayer by saying, "Hi, God, it's me, Nancy." I mean, he said his name. But so I could work with that. And that's how I started to pray. And I got that relationship with God, with you guys teaching me to pray in the car, hands on the steering wheel, driving to work on, 10 freeway headed east, downtown LA. "Hi, God, it's me, Nancy." And to this day, when I say, and I say it all the time, "Hi, God, it's me, Nancy," I get a warm tingling. I get a feeling here, and I feel the connection. And I got that here. So when I say you guys changed me, it's because you did. The Big Book changed me, page 37, the guy teaching about the prayer, you guys talking about, you guys are going to remember Richie. Remember how Richie used to close all of his shares? He used to say, "I may not be what I think I should be. I may not be what I want to be, but by the grace of God, I'm not how I used to be." And I might not be quoting it exactly, but I would hear him share and close every time with that. I'd hear you guys talk about things that I couldn't put into words, and they made absolute sense to me. Am I done? Is it finished?
Three more minutes.
Three more. Okay. I got confused by that timer thing. Let me just talk a minute about what it's like now. Some of you know me. Today happens to be my daughter's birthday, February 27th. My daughter who died just a few years ago. And it was a real treat for me when Lindsay asked me to share, and today was the date, February 27th, that I get to come to a meeting on February 27th. And you guys walked me through that. Somebody I met in the rooms, dear, dear friend of mine that I know from here, was in the room with me when my daughter passed away. First person I called when she died, my sponsor. This is you guys. I don't think of myself as working a program. This is how I live my life. In the morning, I get up in the morning. I wake up. I meditate. I pray. I don't care so much about what I do with my hands. In the "Hi, God, it's me, Nancy," I start to pray. I meditate. I take sponsee calls. I read literature. Did you guys read For Today this morning? It was quite pleasant. If you haven't read it, For Today was good today. I use other daily readers. I go to meetings. I have service commitments. I'm active in this fellowship. I'm active with my steps. I'm active in my program. And this literally is how I live. When big things happen, the first thing that occurs to me is you guys, program, my higher power, the steps, my sponsor. This is how I live my life. And I could go on and on about this literally, but it's time for me to stop. And I want to thank you all for listening to my share.